You are listening to Long Innings, brought to you by Cricket Next.
Cricket, like any other sport, has had its fair share of controversies. Ball tampering, match fixing, spot fixing, sledging, pitches favouring the home team excessively, bad umpiring decisions affecting the outcome of games, and so on. And every now and then, a couple of cricketers have a go at each other, and sometimes it's just harmless, so to get a psychological edge, but sometimes it can get a bit ugly. For example, Miadad versus Lily, Ian Chappell versus Ian Botham. Now, there have been, however, certain unique cases that have cropped up from time to time. We recently explored the Ganguly-Chappell saga, and today we take a closer look at the Muralidharan-Darryl Hare no-bowling controversy and why there was more to it than met the eye.
On this episode of Long Innings, we take a closer look at the Muralidharan-Darryl Hare no-bowling controversy.
Viewed in isolation, sometimes there are bowlers who are deemed to have illegal actions. And once they are reported to have it, they are required to have their actions examined by a team of experts under technological supervision. Once that is done, they have to make the necessary adjustments as recommended, and then they are good to go. In fact, in recent times, there have been many bowlers who've had to make such corrective actions. Well, it might sound simple right now, but then there was a time when it was not, and there was a big stigma attached to it. ICC has a very well laid out template to examine illegal actions, get them remedied, and reintroduce the guilty bowler back into mainstream cricket. Sunil Narayan, Saeed Ajmal, Akila Dhananjaya, Pragyan Ojha, these are four examples of people who've undergone the process of correcting their action as per ICC norms in recent times. They can all be thankful to a certain Muthaiya Muralidharan. When Murali burst into the scene in the early 1990s, that particular turn that he got bowling his off-spin caught everyone's attention. For starters, he was a wrist-spinning off-spinner and had a very unique action which took a while for batsmen to figure. Sometimes when bowlers bowl, there is a bend in their elbow at the time of delivery. The ICC acknowledges this to be normal and allows for a 15% bend. However, in the early 1990s, the permissible bend was 5%. Anyone with rudimentary knowledge of bowling or anyone who has at least played gully cricket will acknowledge that the more you bend your elbows, the more spin you can impart to the ball. It's all fine in the local neighbourhood maidan, but when you're playing international cricket, bending your elbow to the point that you're chucking or throwing is a complete no-no. Anyone doing that in the gentleman's game is a cheat and must be stopped. So, when Murali burst into the scene with his freakish turn and unique action that players from outside the subcontinent, read Australians and the English, could not decipher and started getting wickets by the buckets, it inevitably raised a few eyebrows. How can he be getting that much turn bowling off spin? It must be because he's chucking because of that weird action. A fairly convenient judgment was arrived at, though no one really spoke about it officially. There were rumours that a few people felt his action was illegal. The episode in Australia 1995. While there were murmurs about his action being suspect, it all came to a head on Boxing Day, the 26th of December in 1995. It was during the second test in Melbourne against Australia that the fireworks were set off. One of the officiating umpires in the match, Darryl Hare, felt that Murali was bending his arm and then straightening it in the process of delivery, something which is an illegal action in cricket. Thus, when Murali bowled from the end that Hare was officiating from, he was no-balled 7 times in 3 overs. Incidentally, Murali had bowled 2 overs from the other end, from which Steve Dunn, the other umpire in the match, was officiating and had faced no trouble. When after lunch he switched ends to bowl from Hare's end, the trouble began. His 3rd over, the first from Hare's end, was a maiden and all deliveries deemed legitimate. In the 4th, he was no-balled 2 times by Hare and 3 times in the 4th over. These 5 calls certainly had Murali and his captain at that time, Arjuna Ranatunga, upset. Even the commentators on air, Tony Gregg and Bill Laurie, were perplexed with this no-balling and were sympathetic to Murali's plight. They feared long-term damage to his fledgling career. In fact, Arjuna left the team for a few minutes after that to consult with his team management on what the approach on the field should be. On his return, he persisted with Murali from Hare's end and was called 2 more in his 6th over. Ranatunga then removed Murali from the attack and reintroduced him shortly thereafter from the other end. He bowled 32 overs after being no-balled without being no-balled again by Hare. The fallout Well, the Sri Lankan team management was notably incensed by this event, but at the end of the match sought permission from the ICC to confer with Hare to understand what exactly was the issue that he saw in Murli's action so that they could work towards remedying it. While the ICC agreed to this proposal, the Australian Cricket Board did not allow it, fearing that it would then become a norm for players to question umpires and seek time with them. The Sri Lankans then decided to play Murli regardless in matches during the ODI series to follow, in which Hare would not officiate. The Sri Lankans also felt let down by the ICC, who defended Hare by saying that in the past, they had taken steps to determine the legitimacy of Murli's action without much success. This strained the cricketing relationships between the two nations, which took years to mend, and at times got a bit vitriolic between the sets of players in the two teams involved, which was evident particularly in the Aussie contempt for Ranatunga. It also did the job of galvanizing the Sri Lankan team to rally behind Murli. Hare, on his part, felt and continues to feel that what he did was right. He felt that Murli's action was illegal, and if nothing was done about it, it would lead to a lot of children trying to copy what was an illegal action. At the time, during that test match, at tea on the first day, Hare said in a determined fashion that he would continue to no-ball Murli no matter which end he bowled from, but did not do so. He called him only from his end. Whether Hare was taking a stand against illegal action or whether it was something else will never be known. But what is known is that a few years later, Hare was involved in another controversy when he penalised the Pakistan team for what he felt was ball tampering during a test match in England in 2006. When the Pakistanis were upset and did not take the field after a session break, Hare duly awarded the match to England, saying that Pakistan had decided to forfeit the match by not taking the field. It's a pity that, surprisingly or unsurprisingly, none of the 32 cameras that were capturing the action on the field that day could provide any evidence that the Pakistani team had indulged in any sort of ball tampering. It is said of wicketkeepers and umpires that if they're not really noticed during a match, they've done their job well. What diminishes Hare's credibility further is that years later, he was caught and admitted to doing so, embezzling money to the tune of $9,000 from his place of work in order to satiate his gambling dues as a result of his addiction to gambling. Draw your own conclusions about Mr. Hare then. What of Murli? While one can't do much about what people think, what hurt Murli the most was being humiliated by Hare only for ICC to come out with a statement that the findings regarding his actions were inconclusive as to its legality. To Murli, this was like a sword hanging over his head that would tarnish his reputation. So, he did what he could. He cooperated with the ICC when they conducted biochemical analysis of his action. He was made to bowl for hours under the watchful eyes of representatives from the University of Western Australia and also at the Hong Kong University of Science and Technology. Their conclusion? Murli's action, though legal, created an optical illusion of throwing. This was due to a congenital problem that prevented his elbow from fully straightening, and people hence felt, incorrectly, that Murli was throwing. You would think that this would quiet the doubters, but that really never happened. Hare, in his recent interviews, still maintains that what he did was right. Just to go back a bit, in that fateful tour to Australia, during the ODI leg of the tour in Jan 1996, officiating in his first ODI, Australian umpire Ross Emerson began no-balling Murli. He even no-balled Murli when he bowled leg spin, which requires the elbow to be straight, so much so that Murli was dropped from the Sri Lankan team entirely for the fear of being no-balled for the rest of the tour. So, after the testing and the green shit, when Murli was back there in 1999, again, Ross Emerson no-balled Murli. And this led to protests again from the Sri Lankan team, and they threatened to walk out of the match, only to continue with Murli having to bowl leg spin. Emerson, though, has gone on record to say that Asian countries had too much control over cricket and something needed to be done. Perhaps he felt that no-balling Murli would be the right way to counter the Asians. That said, one of Murli's staunchest critics was outspoken former Indian spinner Bishan Singh Bedi, who felt that the ICC let Murli get away with it. Cricketers like Gilchrist too have had their doubts over the years, and he was reported by ICC match referee Chris Broad in 2004. This 2004 reporting led to a fresh round of testing of Murli's action. He chose not to tour Australia then and instead underwent extensive testing. The tests proved again that there was nothing illegal about his action. Due to deformities, his elbow could not straighten beyond a point, so the law was modified to allow for a 15-degree bend of the elbow, up from the 5. Having always been ready to be tested and having passed all tests, one can surmise that Murali's action is legal and that the Hares and Emersons of the world were wrong. But unfortunately, these two episodes, particularly the one involving Daryl Hare, will always be remembered when one recalls Murali's career. Due to this reason, and with former cricketers openly criticizing Murali, there will always be a cloud, if not a question mark, a murmur, if not an open question, about the legitimacy of Murali's action. When Tony Greig saw Murali being no-balled by Hare, he feared that a young man's career would be destroyed. Well, the good news is that Murali went on to have a very successful career after that. He ended up being the leading wicket-taker in Test history with 800 scalps. He has left a mark and a rich legacy. But the no-ball controversy of 1995 has left many in doubt over his action. Was the rule modified to accommodate a 15-degree bend as a result of the ICC bowing to the money and power of the Asian countries? Well, we'll never know the answers. But should we be even asking the question in the first place?
This podcast was brought to you by Cricket Next. Thanks for tuning in.